From 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR, this is Lake Effect. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Today, we'll learn how federal money from the Inflation Reduction Act is incentivizing energy upgrades to Milwaukee-area homes. Then, contributor and community activist Venus Williams shares her viral post responding to the presidential election and the unexpected impact it's had around the world.
If you are a friend with me on Facebook, you know this is how I write a post. I write the way I speak, so I never saw it as a poem or a piece of prose, but my deep feelings pouring out.
Plus, astronomy contributor Jean Creighton shares a preview of her personal program, A Night in Greece, inspired by her many visits back home to Athens.
So I figure, given that my suitcase is small but the planetarium is big, better to put them in the planetarium and take them with me.
All that's coming up on Lake Effect, but first, here are today's headlines. This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks for joining us. The Walker's Point Youth and Family Center has provided free emergency housing and counseling services for Milwaukee area youth for nearly 50 years. For most of that time, the center has received federal grant funding to support its youth emergency shelter program. In October, without warning, that funding was not awarded to the shelter. Milwaukee's Common Council is currently debating whether to approve a matching grant that would help cover the loss of funding. Audra O'Connell is the executive director of the Walker's Point Youth and Family Center, and she joins Lake Effect's Sam Woods to explain what this funding deficit might mean and how the loss of the youth shelter would impact young people in Milwaukee and beyond. O'Connell begins with an overview of the center's services.
So Walker's Point Youth and Family Center has been around since 1976, and we really focus on three different types of programming for our young people. One level is our supportive housing. So for 18 to 24-year-olds, we have scattered site apartments all over Milwaukee where they can live by themselves or with their families with intensive case management and rent subsidy for up to 2 years. And then we have a mental health clinic for 11 to 17-year-olds. So those are for young people that both are in the shelter and then young people that are not in the shelter. So young people or their families can call our crisis line and they can be set up with a licensed therapist to receive mental health services free of charge. We don't bill insurance. And then we also have an emergency shelter for 11 to 17-year-olds. We can house up to 8 young people at a time. And then we also are a little bit different because we can also house pregnant and parenting teens.
Well, focusing on that shelter and your services for young people, what are some common themes in terms of life situations that come through your doors?
Yeah, when we're talking about the shelter, we are serving young people who, you know, they're coming to us at, you know, one of the roughest times in their lives. They're not coming to us because everything's going right, obviously. So, you know, it can run a gamut. Sometimes we have young people coming to us because they're, you know, not getting along with their parents and they're having, you know, horrific fights and they need to come and stay with us for a while. So both the family as a whole and the young person can seek some mental health services together with our therapists. And also that young person can be at our shelter and kind of regroup and figure out a healthy path forward. And then we can work together with them. They can discharge successfully, and then they can continue that therapy with our agency. And then, you know, all the way down the line, we work with young people that have been trafficked who come and stay with us. We work with young people who have been living in cars. We work with young people who are part of a family unit, and family shelter is pretty scarce in Milwaukee. And so sometimes it makes sense to have the older young people come and stay at our shelter while maybe mom is in single shelter and we're all working together to get them housed successfully. So it's a mixed bag.
The center has been in the news recently because of an unexpected loss of a federal grant called the Basic Center Program Grant. So I want to start off with the obvious first question. What is the Basic Center Program Grant?
Yeah, so the Basic Center Grant is, like you said, it's a federal grant. It is a three-year cycle grant. So it is something that we have received dating back to the 1970s. So that kind of goes to tell you how stable this funding has been. We typically receive $200,000 a year for 3 years, so $600,000. And it goes to fund our emergency shelter operations. And in our case, that's funding primarily salaries for staff, because when you're operating an emergency shelter, you have to have it staffed 24/7, 365. And so that has been around as long as we've been around. It's something that is funded through the Runaway and Homeless Youth Act, which is a federal act that has not been reauthorized in 5 years. And because of that, it has made this funding kind of remain in limbo during that time.
This may wade a little bit into politics, perhaps, but I'm curious, why has the Runaway and Homeless Youth Act not been reauthorized in 5 years?
You know, that's a good question. It's not for a lack of trying. I think we belong to the Wisconsin Association of Homeless and Runaway Youth, and it's something that both here in Wisconsin and nationwide, there has been pretty substantial advocacy efforts to try to get it reauthorized. At different points in time, it has received bipartisan support, but it's just never picked up momentum enough to go and make its way through the legislative process.
Gotcha. When someone hears that, you know, an organization like yours did not get a grant, they might assume that this could be for a number of reasons. But were you ever given an explanation as to why this grant was not awarded to you after, as you say, it's been awarded to this center since the 70s?
Yeah, so I will tell you, in this grant, if you have filed it late, they actually would reject your application, which was not our case. But actually, in our case, when we were finally notified, because it wasn't the federal government that initially notified us that we were rejected, it was Senator Baldwin's office when I called to inquire on, you know, the status, because we just weren't hearing. So, you know, weeks later, the federal government finally released our scoring, and our scoring was high. We scored high enough to be considered fundable. We weren't funded. And then when we looked at the comments, and then we later, thankfully, from the senator, we were able to have a debrief with the federal government on our grant. You know, the message was really clear. There was nothing wrong with the program. There was nothing wrong with the application per se. It was just, you know what? You just didn't get picked this year. Try again next year.
How do you hear something like that in the moment of saying, this is funding that you've come to rely on just because it has been coming your way for decades, and nothing substantial seems to have changed the way I'm hearing it. But then you're told, try again next year. Sometimes you don't get it.
You know, I think it's difficult because I've never been put in the situation of people that work at the federal level, because when I hear about this grant and what happened, I don't see point rubrics or questions or how they determined this. I see the young lady we were serving this week that came to us after sitting up all night in a hospital waiting room because she had nowhere to go. And, you know, I see the young people that come to us because they were trafficked on the streets. I see it as children, quite frankly. I don't see it as papers that are, you know, marked rejected and try again next year. So it was pretty disheartening. I see it as a massive loss to our community. And I, quite frankly, I see it as a slap in the face to Wisconsin.
Let me lean into that angle of, you know, not talking about this as paperwork, but talking about this as people. Say this funding never comes through for the foreseeable future. What happens? Who is affected?
So who would be affected would be, you know, the 200 to 300 young people that we serve in our shelter every single year. Who would be affected are, you know, the 1,200 counseling session, individual counseling sessions that we've had every single year that we're able to provide free of charge to these young people and their families. Who's going to be affected are the young people in our community that need these services desperately that are not going to have access to them. And then I think it's important to note that it's not just a Milwaukee problem. It's a problem for our entire region because the counties that border Milwaukee do not have runaway or homeless youth shelters. And then, like I said, we are the only shelter in our entire region that houses pregnant and parenting teens. So young people come to us from pretty far away if they are, you know, teen parents seeking shelter. So it's going to affect, you know, we're talking about Ozaukee County and Waukesha County and Walworth County and Jefferson County and all of these counties around us, too, that rely on our services.
So the city of Milwaukee is discussing right now if they may be able to step in and cover a portion of what this grant would cover. But you mentioned that this is has regional effects. Have cities or counties outside of the city of Milwaukee reach out to you or stepped up in a way of saying, okay, we see this is an issue. We see this affects us as well. We'd like to help.
No, I haven't heard from anyone outside of Milwaukee County.
So with that in mind, that the city of Milwaukee is currently discussing if it is going to step in and help cover some of these financial gaps left from this grant, are you able to speak about what happens next?
Yeah, so I believe that on the 26th of November, you know, it has made its way through the Community Economic Development Committee, and it was passed unanimously. It does have six co-sponsors, which I think is powerful and speaks to how many people support this effort. And then on the 26th, it goes to the full Common Council to be approved. If it is in fact approved, then we will receive, you know, $100,000 from the city of Milwaukee. And we're very grateful to the city. They have been supporters of Walker's Point since 1976 when we started, and we really appreciate them stepping up now when they didn't have to. And so, yeah, I mean, I think you can follow that through the Common Council. The other issue is that, so obviously we're really grateful to the city of Milwaukee for, you know, potentially giving us this $100,000. We're also incredibly grateful to United Way of Greater Milwaukee and Waukesha Counties because they have stepped in with some funding, but there is still a gap that remains to be filled. So if people are interested, they can go to our website, walkerspoint.org, and click that donate button.
Well, Audra, thank you so much for joining me on Lake Effect. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Audra O'Connell is the executive director of the Walker's Point Youth and Family Center. She spoke with Lake Effect's Sam Woods. The Inflation Reduction Act, which Congress passed in 2022, represents the biggest boost of federal funding for climate action in United States history. It earmarked $369 billion to tackle climate change and bring the country closer to the goal of cutting pollution in half by 2030. That tide is expected to turn when Donald Trump returns to the Oval Office. The president-elect nominated a fracking company executive and outspoken climate change skeptic to serve as energy secretary. In the meantime, folks around the country are working hard to put IRA dollars to work now, including Kevin Kane. He leads Milwaukee-based Green Homeowners United, It's among the accredited contractors working with families to use IRA rebates to make their homes more energy efficient. WUWM's Susan Benz met Kane at a home in Wauwatosa, where he and his team were finishing a project.
We are spending a lot of time with low-income residents, which is wonderful because in addition to them getting more rebate dollars, they also tend to be the homes that have the most to gain because they've deferred so much of this.
What is the range of potential for the average home for what they can plug into in terms of being compensated through IRA, and what can they do for the health of their home and their family?
More moderate income individuals are going to be able to be eligible for more rebate that immediately offsets the cost, anywhere from $5,000 for a 20% energy reduction to more than $10,000 in some cases for a 35% reduction. And I have to commend people like Focus on Energy and Milwaukee's Eco Office for actually trying to help people sign up and in some cases chip in additional rebates. For those that are higher income, you might get less rebate, but you can also get federal tax credits after rebates are included, like $1,200 in a federal tax credit for insulation, or $2,000 for a heat pump in some cases. And so the sort of mixing and matching of different incentives is going to make it really more approachable for so many people. And so like this gentleman here in Wauwatosa, kind of a lower income individual, but you know, beautiful home and the chance to save a lot of energy. What we just do want to stress to people is it's not maybe always the energy saving things you think it is. It's usually not the windows. It's usually not the refrigerator. It's going to be in things that I think deep down we all know works: ceiling air leaks, insulating the home, sometimes replacing heating systems.
A small nuance is the window side, because that can be a real energy leaker, can't it?
Not as much as I think the window salespeople want us to think. When you kind of think about it a little bit, it makes a bit of sense. Warm air tends to rise. It tends to leave out of the highest point, makes the attic probably the most important piece. And if you feel air leaking in through the windows, that means it's leaking out somewhere else. And so it's usually far more cost effective to go into the attic and move the insulation and seal the various air leaks. So it's not to say the windows don't matter, it's just they're much more expensive for the benefit they have. But yes, I have yet to see a single house where replacing every window would save even 20% energy. Not once.
So would this house be a candidate for a heat pump?
It could very well be. Especially the more insulated and sealed a house is, the more a heat pump is going to make sense. In Wisconsin, you still need a backup heating system, but the more sealed and insulated it is, the less energy it's going to use. Like a day like today, it's cool.
Yeah,
a heat pump could be great. No, it's fine. A heat pump could be great for heating it too, but you drop down to, let's say, 30 degrees, it's going to use a bit more energy than it might use today. That way, the more insulated and sealed it is, the better. So we have this other incentive coming later for heat pumps. And so we'll tell people, hey, use the rebate that's available today called the Homes Rebate. Let's seal and insulate the house. We'll come back later and help them with the heat pump rebate when that's live in a month or two.
So that's also falls under the IRA, though?
Mm-hmm. If you're eligible for one, you're eligible for both.
Okay. So can we go anywhere and see what's going
come on?
In.
Okay. You can come on down. So what you're seeing here is one of the kind of two parts of the project that we're going to frequently do. I think most people, when they think about insulation, they think about their walls, they think about their attic. What we're trying to let people think about is their basement is actually the biggest uninsulated space left in most homes. All newly built homes in Wisconsin are required to have insulation in their basement, but older homes tended not to. And so a house like this, you know, we're putting in a type of rigid insulation board that is fire safe and a vapor barrier, not the whole way, but just the upper half, the coldest part of the wall, the part that sticks out above ground and is a few feet below ground where the ground sub freezes outside. But we like to say this is half the material, half the labor, more than half the savings. So as far as the most bang for the buck, what we're finding is insulating the basement, sealing air leaks, where, you know, see the foam here that's kind of blocking air leaks.
Yeah.
And then going in the attic, sealing air leaks and blowing in more insulation often is how you get to 20% savings before even talking about heat pumps. So they're finishing up here. Again, this is a special fire-rated board. This wasn't really on the market. You can't get these at Home Depot for the most part or big box stores. But you could drywall it. You could paint it. You don't have to. We think it's super important for older homes because, again, you sometimes get a little moisture at the base.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean we should give up on those homes and not insulate them. We're losing all this heat.
Yeah.
And people are like, oh, my basement's cold. Well, yeah, this is exactly why your basement's cold.
Sure.
But you're kicking up all this extra heat from your furnaces and boilers in the basement. Some of it rises, but some of it leaks out unless you insulate and seal.
Yeah.
So I would say we spend most of our time in basements right now.
And then upstairs, remind me what's going on then.
They are, right now they're running this blower door device, which measures how leaky the house was before and after. And so it's going to depressurize the house, pull all the air out of it. When it's running, you can put your hand up and you can feel, oh my gosh, I can feel the air coming through.
Okay.
What we're not trying to make the house airtight. What we're trying to do is reduce it by a measurable amount to say, hey, this house is 25% less leaky than it was before.
Yeah.
Because we want to help make sure that, you know, air drafts don't cause you to, oh, you can hear it turning on.
Yeah. So what, how many operations, and I'm sure they vary, are there like yours in the state, do you think, that can work with homeowners and do this kind of, I mean, I have the impression that you're like IRA advisor on steroids.
We have been advocating for making sure this program works for people in the 2 years since it's passed. And, you know, right after the law passed, I read the thing upside and downside as far as what impact it had on homes. And we've played the role of advocate for consumers, advisor to public policy experts, working with workforce agencies to try to figure out what is to be expected as this really rolls out. And while I'd like to think there's not quite operations quite like ours, there are plenty of energy assessors and insulation and heating firms all over the state of Wisconsin, and more are being added to this list of IRA registered contractors.
You report back to the government, or the homeowner does, or both?
Both. So for lower income individuals, we are required to reduce the price of the project immediately so the homeowner doesn't have to front the money somehow and then be reimbursed sometime down the line. We are working with the state to make sure we have photos of the work that we have done, that we have done the necessary safety and diagnostic tests, and that what we said was going to happen matches it. We have to write this big report energy assessment model that compares against historical energy bills so we don't overpromise the benefit. And then we send it all back to the state and say, this is the impact that was expected for this home. We just have to model a 20% savings. If in some cases, we'll go above and beyond that, though.
How much of the IRA money goes to these kinds of projects? You know, what percent?
Sure. So about $74 million was dedicated to this homes rebate program that is going to really go to projects like this. It can sometimes go to other improvements like windows and furnaces, but for the most part, it's not just going to be that. It's usually got to be kind of a holistic, large-scale impact on the overall house, such as insulating it top to bottom. The other program is the HEAR, H-E-A-R, rebate for heat pumps and electrification. Okay. That is another $74 million that is not yet hitting the ground. The part that we don't know, Wisconsin did not get all that money at the same time. And so we are waiting to hear how much of it is coming to the state and how much of it is still yet to arrive, and if anything might change under the new administration.
Well, that's just the question. So could it be that that second installment for the heat pumps, etc., could go away?
Anything's possible. The amount of money that is dedicated to these incentives from the IRA is baked into the law itself, the dollar amounts. And so on some level, kind of like when the Trump administration tried to repeal the Affordable Care Act, they couldn't just unilaterally stop it. Instead, they ended up making changes to it that made it maybe easier or harder, depending on who you are, to use. We expect that that may be similar if they're so inclined to want to change it. But Wisconsin's got a large chunk of the money. They can still apply for more of the money. And we want to make sure that it's being used as quickly as possible, because that just shows there's so much good that can be done to cut energy savings. This isn't too out there. Everyone agrees insulating makes sense.
Your own operation, you're going at full capacity. You're doing as much as you can in working with homeowners.
Mm-hmm.
How many projects have you done, and are you juggling now?
As of right now, the state has formally approved only about 10 of the projects we've submitted over to them yet. And so the delay is more that we're waiting for our homes that we've submitted to be approved. We have many more times that awaiting approval. So
like,
that's
like how many?
It's probably like 15 houses we're waiting to hear back on. Okay. And some of it is just the paperwork that you have to check everything and make sure our math is good and all that. I'd like to think my math's very good. And we then are helping north of 50 people already try to go through the paperwork. And so in our office, we have a giant wall-mounted charts of the names and where they are. And we're just working with them every day. Did you get this form, that form? Did you sign this? And we're slowly but surely guiding them through this process.
So if the IRA lives its full life as intended, how much money could come? How many just in terms of what you're able to do, and you basically concentrate on the Milwaukee or southeastern Wisconsin. You yourself,
we do. We'll be opening an office in La Crosse in a few months.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually
because
going
because of all this.
Yes.
Wow.
Plus the other support from the state to try to advance this sort of work. But for context, a house like this, where we're able to again insulate the basement, seal air leaks, insulate the attic, hit that 20% savings. We could do this more than 10,000 times with the amount of money that Wisconsin is getting and still have money left over. With that, we're expecting to be able to hire a lot of workers into union jobs fighting climate change. At this stage, the thing we're waiting the most on is this more approvals and just a speedier process. But Wisconsin is the first in the nation for this.
Yeah.
And so little things we want to work on, like, for example, I cannot help a duplex today. That's not part of the law. It's just that that system hasn't been finalized. This moment, I can only help a single family home that has lived there for 12 months or more.
What drew you to this work?
So I was a community organizer for many years and policy advocate, and we were trying to, at the time, figure out, is there a way to advance green jobs? We thought that was the future of in some cases, blue-collar work, was the kind of jobs that help the planet, help homeowners, help all that sort of thing. In our negotiations and campaigns with local governments and banks and utility companies, we found out that the biggest worst in our communities was homes. 9 out of 10 buildings are homes, and most of them don't have enough insulation or too leaky. And so we thought, well, this was a huge opportunity to create good jobs in almost any community. And so while we spun off from the nonprofit I was part of, what became Green Homeowners United, to guide people through rebates, tax credits, fair financing, whatever program was out there. At the time, we were working a lot with banks on what became known as green mortgages. But now, with the advent of the Inflation Reduction Act, it doesn't matter if someone's newly buying a home or has lived there for 30 years, there's a good chance that we can help you and connect you to incentives to make it more affordable. In some cases, like the homeowner today, only cost him $1.
That's incredible.
Based on his income, based on what we found was going to save 20% on the energy bills or more, we were able to utilize different rebate programs, including Wisconsin's existing Focus on Energy program, the new Inflation Reduction Act rebates. And we worked to improve the cost effectiveness of the job that you've seen here so that we could fit it within the amount that the rebates covered. So we really can help moderate income homeowners do the right thing and not have to pay out the nose for it. And everybody wins. Good for the people, good for the planet, good for my workers.
That was Kevin Kane of Green Homeowners United talking with WUWM environmental reporter Susan Benz about home energy efficiency project rebates made possible by the Federal Inflation Reduction Act. Did you know you can listen to Like Effect as a podcast? Just search for Like Effect wherever you get your podcasts to download and listen on demand. Later this hour, we'll hear from astronomy contributor Gene Creighton about an upcoming planetarium event focused on Greece. But first, Venus Williams shares her Facebook post that went viral after the November 5th election. That's coming up on Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. You're listening to Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. You may know Venus Williams as our regular Dig In contributor and the executive director of Alice's Garden and the Fondy Food Center. But if you were scrolling Facebook in the days just after the November 5th election, you may have seen her using her voice in a different way. A post to her personal Facebook page about her feelings after the election went viral. Thousands of people around the world shared it and resonated with her words. She joins Lake Effect's Joy Powers to read her post for the first time aloud and give her thoughts on what Thanksgiving means in 2024.
You are awakening to the same country you fell asleep to. The very same country. Pull yourself together. And when you see me, do not ask me, what did we do now? How do we get through the next 4 years? Some of my ancestors dealt with at least 400 years of this under worse conditions. Continue to do the good work. Continue to build bridges, not walls. Continue to lead with compassion. continue the demanding work of liberation for all. Continue to dismantle broken systems, large and small. Continue to set the best example for the children. Continue to be a vessel of nourishing joy. Continue right where you are, right where you live into your days. Do so in the name of the Creator, who expects nothing less from each of us. And if you are not continuing all of the above in community, partnership, collaboration, what is it you have been doing? What is it you are waiting for?
Since posting that message, there has been a lot made of it. It's really rung around the world. What are the kinds of responses that you're getting from it that really resonate with you?
Today with you in this moment is the first time that I have read it aloud in my own voice. What is really funny is when people say, what is the title of your poem? If you are a friend with me on Facebook, you know this is how I write a post. I write the way I speak. So I never saw it as a poem or a piece of prose, but my deep feelings pouring out. But what's most important is that I'm still in community here in the city of Milwaukee, and I still get to lead Bible studies and reading groups, reading circles, and make healing balms and salves and teas, and I get to continue the work. Which is why, as I look at this next holiday that's coming up for us, this next big holiday that, whether we want to admit it or not, is connected to the results of this election. So we're about to collectively celebrate a federal holiday that was the beginning of colonialism for the United States of America. That, for my Choctaw heritage and for all of my indigenous siblings, began the attempt to dehumanize us, to massacre us, to act like we could just be dismissed and erased. And I had a conversation just yesterday with some folks who look like me, with Black people, and I asked them after I came back to a table, would we celebrate this holiday if it was based on 1444, when that first Portuguese vessel arrived on the west coast of Africa and took those first 230 plus slaves to Portugal? Would we be celebrating this holiday if it commemorated 1619, when an additional vessel came and stole people who looked like us and brought them to Virginia? So you can't even imagine deconstructing Thanksgiving, but you want to build a platform of dismantling racism? I don't get it. And I myself grew up celebrating Thanksgiving. It was when I came to this city as the youth minister at Cross Lutheran Church. Cross Lutheran Church awakened me to what my family had not. And yet, I still continue to celebrate Thanksgiving. I owe my children, who are now adults, an apology, because what we model is what becomes entrenched. So what can we do instead of? I'm not crazy. I know that in my lifetime, this federal holiday will not be going away. I fully understand that. I also understand that what we have attempted to do in changing Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day, and that some states have come on board with that, is a first step. But I also understand that even though it will not be eradicated in my lifetime, I am called to use my voice, especially in my community, to say, come on, y'all. You can celebrate family. You can give thanks. You can bring forth a spirit of gratitude any day of the year you choose to. But for me, with my African and Choctaw ancestry, I can no longer participate in this. And so what can we do? What are our options? Go ahead. You already purchased that turkey. You've done all of that. Why is it so hard to celebrate your family and friends on another day? So what if some of us chose to fast and pray on that day, to totally flip that script of consuming more than we need as wonderful and as good as it tastes, but let's fast and pray from sunrise to sunset and to really give our bodies over to understanding that we need to refrain and step back from genocide, from racism, from colonialism, that is all of which are still alive and well today. Let's challenge our mindset. Let's challenge our traditions until we do the deep, hard work. This country will never change.
It is an interesting holiday to follow so closely to an election that I think that there are people who are thankful for, and then others who are deeply afraid of what the future might hold. It's a holiday that, as you say, is very indicative of the maybe fallacy of the American story, a country that's built on the promise of egalitarianism and equality and hope for the future that has often put barricades to ensure that that hope cannot be realized by the vast majority of people. I think that there are good things about Thanksgiving, specifically the idea of looking over your year and being thankful, and being thankful for the people around you and appreciating and enjoying their company and their presence. But how are you embodying that outside of this holiday that is full of contradictions?
Every day I pick up my telephone and I call someone who I have not spoken to in a while. So I give thanks and gratitude for someone in my life every single day. No, I don't miss on that. I hold on to the beauty of who we can be as a country. I hold on to hope. I hold on to all of that every time I gather people. Let's cook together. Let's help our parents together. Let's do yoga together. Let's meditate together. Let's challenge policies together. Every single day is an opportunity, for each and every one of us to be agents of change.
This is a bit of a different dig in than we usually have. But that being said, there's always a book.
Always a book. Always a book. So the book that I want to share today is about the incredible food of our First Nations, our First Nation legacies. And it's the Pueblo Food Experience Cookbook, Whole Food of Our Ancestors. And it's by Roxanne Swinsel and Patricia Perea. But Roxanne is an incredible artist in Santa Fe. It's a beautiful, beautiful book that helps us to understand the origins and the uses of the different kinds of corn and peppers and all of those wonderful things. It's a narrative. It's as much as a storybook as it is a cookbook. So it is one that I purchased, I don't know how many years ago. I have a copy that is for cooking, that's really messy. And then I have a copy just like this that goes upstairs in my bedroom for reading and soothing and remembering what it is we are to do and who we are to be.
All right. Well, Venus, as always, thank you for joining us here on Lake Effect.
And thank you for having me.
Happy Venus Williams is the executive director of Alice's Garden and the Fondy Food Center. She regularly joins Like Effect's Joy Powers for a series we call Dig In. You can find their previous conversations at WUWM.com. A new season of Bubbler Talk is underway, but we still need some new questions. Submit your questions about the Milwaukee area at WUWM.com. We'll take one more break, and then our astronomy contributor, Jean Creighton, will join us to share more about a very personal planetarium show. Keep listening to Like Effect on WUWM. This is Lake Effect on Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Lake Effect astronomy contributor Jean Creighton has joined us regularly for years to talk about topics ranging from the stories behind constellations to exoplanets and space missions. However, an upcoming show at the Manfred Olson Planetarium has special meaning to Creighton. It's called A Night in Greece. While there will, of course, be indoor stargazing, she's also going to take visitors on a tour through her hometown of Athens to share her most beloved spots and her favorite Greek myths. Creighton joins me now to share more, starting with what inspired her to make a more personal presentation.
The real reason comes down to this, that people come up to me at the end of programs and say, oh, I wish you could take me with you. And even friends, you know, I'm sure they would love to come to Greece with me. It is not practical. It's not possible to bring all these people with me. So I figure, given that my suitcase is small, but the planetarium is big, better to put them in the planetarium and take them with me.
I love that. And specifically, we're going to travel to your hometown in Athens, Greece, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that has so much history, obviously, and significance for the country. So where are we starting on this journey in relation to your life?
We're starting basically in the last 10 years, where I have had the opportunity to go to Greece many times, bring my family with. They also have a different barometer of what's interesting to them. So I have an idea of what a person who didn't grow up there might find amusing. My mother has dementia, so it's important for me to kind of see how she's changing with time. And of course, to support my brother. I also enjoy going home because I feel like I connect to a piece of me that somehow gets lost here a little bit.
Yeah, would you say it's an ease of being back home truly? I mean, obviously you've made a home for yourself here in Milwaukee, but it can't compare.
It's different. Yeah. So I do feel very connected to Milwaukee. It's true. And I've been here now for, 25 years. But I do think there's something that's more intuitive to me and just intrinsically. And I love the smells and I love just walking down the street and hearing particular sounds that you just can't hear here. My sons, in fact, say, Mommy, you become a little different when you're in Greece. So I think it's fun to share that. Now, having said that, not only did I grow up in Greece, but I also grew up in a neighborhood that's really close to the Parthenon. So I got to live by this monument day in and day out. And I remember that an English archaeologist said to me, do you ever get bored of this? Like, does it ever become, whatever, the Parthenon? But of course, and I told him, no, it never becomes that way. It's the light that catches it, the particular flavor of the sky. It's always different and it commands your attention.
You're also going to explore things that, of course, yes, command your attention are some of the biggest monuments in Greece, but also some of the smaller, more daily views that you get, such as a farmer's market, right? And how is it different compared to what we might be thinking of for farmer's market here?
Every time we go to Greece, I ask each of my boys, well, they're young men now, what is the thing that you need to do this time? And for some years of their life, they said the farmer's market was, if not one, number two. And I confess, a little surprised about that. Now, especially my older son is very motivated by food. But I think it came down to seeing a farmer's market that is at the bottom of this hill, like literally, I don't know, 100 yards from our front door, where the whole street gets filled with different vendors who sell, you know, their produce. And the boys would go up to these stalls and their eyes would get wide because they'd see there's a mountain of carrots, there's a mountain of oranges. And I find the contrast kind of funny because there's a relatively new farmer's market in Sherwood, and it's been growing and it's great and I'm grateful we have it. But one of the first few times I went there, I went exactly at 9:30 when it opened to get carrots. And I couldn't see any carrots anywhere. And I said, well, I asked one of the vendors, where are the carrots? And he said, oh, I sold them all. And I said, how many did you have? And he said, I had 5 bunches. And I'm thinking, wow. So it's just a different scale, just more food. And families would get, you know, the week's groceries and give the money directly to the person who has dirt in their hands. There's something really satisfying about that.
Absolutely. And you'll be showing pictures of some of these scenes that you're painting for us here on the radio. Can you share anything about any of the photos you'll be showing, both the picturesque monumental things and the daily things that you've grown up with?
Sure. One of my favorite stories is when I brought my person to be my husband for the first time to Greece. I thought, well, there's some tests that he needs to pass, right? So one of the tests was, how would he respond to the Parthenon for the first time? So I made sure that we walked in these small little streets and that we came upon it, like he saw it all at once. And it was nighttime, so it was lit. And I heard him go, and I thought, he's a keeper. If he understands that this is breathtaking, and he didn't say anything, he just did it, I thought, okay, check, he passes that test.
Absolutely.
So the Parthenon has very specific personal connection to me as well.
And outside of monuments such as the Parthenon, you're also including some smaller stops that have great meaning to you. Can you share one or two of those places?
One of the places that I appreciate, especially if I'm in Greece in the summertime, which I confess I try and avoid, but there have been times where either it gets really hot in June or I'm there because I have to be in July, it can get very hot in Athens. So finding refuge in the National Gardens is one of my favorite activities. First of all, there are flowers all year round there. And so it could be, you know, the orange blossoms, it could be the jasmine. In the garden, there's a little coffee place that sometimes it's open, sometimes it's not. You go there and it's sort of a bit of a gamble. But one of the last times we were there, we were drinking coffee with my husband and we're just sitting there and a little bay leaf just falls on the table. And I'm thinking, okay, I pick it up. And I squeeze it in my hands and I'm thinking, oh my God, this is why we use bay leaves, right? This is the smell that we're after. And this is what it's like when it's off the bush. Yum.
Now, granted, of course, it's the planetarium and there will be stargazing. And we've talked a lot about certain myths, constellation stories, but you know, this is really direct from the source for this presentation, yeah.
This is direct from the source. Yep. So we are going to see stars and there'll be a few stories. One of the hardcore fall constellations that we see is Pegasus and looks like a square. The square is fairly high in the sky now, slightly in the west. And Pegasus, of course, is a flying horse, right? And he is the mighty steed that Perseus is riding when he notices that a monster is about to devour the lovely princess Andromeda, who is also a constellation in the sky, and she looks like a curvy V. The story is wonderful because this love affair between Andromeda and Perseus is one of the few Greek myths, the few Greek romances that end up well. They live happily ever after. No god tries to get in their way. And in fact, They are the great grandparents of the most important hero in Greek mythology, which of course would be Hercules. So it is a wonderful bow to put on our evening.
Yes, happy memories and a happy ending for some of the Greek myths.
Yes.
Well, Jean, I want to thank you so much for joining me today to share a little preview of your very special personal presentation.
Thank you so much, Audrey. I'm hoping that you'll come and see the whole thing.
Jean Creighton is the director of UW-Milwaukee's Manfred Olson Planetarium and our regular astronomy contributor. Her show, A Night in Greece, takes place on November 22nd and December 6th. You can find more information at wuwm.com. And that's Lake Effect for today. I'm Audrey Nowakowski. If you've missed any of today's conversations, or if you'd like to take Lake Effect on the go, simply download our podcast. Search for Lake Effect wherever you get your podcasts to listen to all of our shows on demand. Tomorrow on Lake Effect, we'll hear from friends and colleagues of the late Milwaukee alderman, Jonathan Brostoff. Join us tomorrow at noon on Lake Effect, right here on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR.
Grr!